I've titled the sermon this morning, The Faith That Moves the Mountain. And as you can probably tell, that title comes from the scripture reading that you've already heard in Matthew 17. And I'd like to just go ahead and read those verses once more as we get into the lesson today. So we'll begin in Matthew chapter 17, verses 14 to 20. And you will have to open your Bibles if you'd like to follow along. But we'll begin here in Matthew 17 in verse 14. It says, "And when he came to the crowd, a man came up to him, and kneeling before him said, 'Lord, have mercy on my son, for he has seizures, and he suffers terribly. For often he falls into the fire, and often into the water. And I brought him to your disciples, and they could not heal him.' And Jesus answered, 'O faithless and twisted generation, how long am I to be with you? How long am I to bear with you? Bring him here to me.' And Jesus rebuked the demon, and it came out of him, and the boy was healed instantly. Then the disciples came to Jesus privately and said, 'Why could we not cast it out?' He said to them, 'Because of your little faith. For truly I say to you, if you have faith like a grain of mustard seed, you will say to this mountain, move from here to there, and it will move. And nothing will be impossible for you.'" This is a fascinating story from the ministry of Jesus. It's recorded in all three of the synoptic gospels. And all three of them, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, place it immediately after the transfiguration. Luke actually tells us in Luke chapter 9 that this happened on the day after the transfiguration. And part of what makes this story so interesting is the scandal that Jesus discovers when he comes down from the mountain. This is the only instance recorded for us of Jesus' disciples ever failing to perform a miracle. Now, in Acts chapter 19, there were some itinerant Jewish exorcists who went about trying to cast out demons. There was a priest named Sceva who had 7 sons, and they tried to cast demons out, and they failed quite spectacularly in Acts 19. But they had never been given authority by Jesus to do these things. They had never been given authority to perform miracles or to cast out demons. Jesus' disciples had. And they had been successful in the past. And so when Jesus comes down from the Mount of Transfiguration with Peter, James, and John, what he finds is a great controversy, because his disciples have failed to cast this demon out of this man's son. I think there's a lot for us to consider here in this story, and I'd like for us to consider it from 3 different perspectives. First, we'll think about the perspective of the 9 disciples who were at the foot of the mountain, caught up in the scandal. Then, we'll consider the perspective of the father of the boy who had the demons. And then finally, we'll consider the perspective of Peter, James, and John, who came down the mountain with Jesus. So we'll look at the perspective of the 9, the perspective of the father, and then the perspective of the 3. So first, let's talk about the 9 disciples who failed to cast out this demon. I guess the first question that we would want to ask is, why did they fail? What was the issue here? Why were they not able to cast out this demon? And I think that the most likely explanation is that they had begun to rely on their own power instead of the Lord's. You know, you might imagine the first time that these disciples had the opportunity to cast out demons, how they might have approached that situation. You know, even if Jesus has directly told you, you have authority to cast out demons, casting out demons would be a pretty intimidating prospect to pursue. You know, the first time you see somebody who is in this demonic state, you might feel nervous. You might feel a little bit intimidated. You would certainly be humble and prayerful. You'd be asking the Lord, please give me the strength. Please help me to do this. Please allow me to be a force of help and healing in this person's life. And that might have been the way things started for them. But once you've done that a few dozen times, it might be tempting to start taking things a little bit less seriously, or at least to start relying on your own strength and your own power instead of the Lord's. You might start to trust yourself and the work of your hands. You know, you might think about the parallels here in this story to what happened in Exodus 32. In Exodus 32, Moses had been up on Mount Sinai, and remember when he came down the mountain, what he discovered at the foot of the mountain? He found his people in a failure of faith. Jesus had just been up on a mountain, and at the Mount of Transfiguration, he actually met with Moses. Like Moses was transfigured, Jesus was transfigured. And like Moses came down from the mountain and found his people worshiping a golden calf, being unfaithful, Jesus comes down from the mountain and finds his disciples in their own failure of faith. I think if Jesus was holding stone tablets in his hand, he might have been tempted to break them on the spot. And in fact, when he comes down the mountain, what he exclaims in verse 17 is holy exasperation. He says, "O faithless and twisted generation, how long am I to be with you? How long am I to bear with you?" He identifies the problem. The problem is his disciples have demonstrated faithlessness. And then, of course, Jesus goes on to solve the immediate issue here of the man's demon-possessed son. In verse 17, he says, "Bring him here to me." And then in verse 18, it says, Jesus rebuked the demon, and it came out of him, and the boy was healed instantly. But do you see why Jesus is frustrated with his disciples? Jesus knows that it won't be very long before he is not only ascending a mountain for a few days, he will be ascending into heaven. He's not going to be here with them physically for much longer. He's not going to be able to come and physically and directly sort out their problems for them. They are going to have to be able to operate on faith. And so the faithlessness that they've just demonstrated here is concerning. He's not going to leave them as orphans, of course. He will send the Spirit. They will still have a personal connection to Jesus, but soon they will need to be able to operate on faith. And so here, Jesus shows them how important that is. And in fact, that is what he explains in this follow-up conversation that we read about down in verse 20. In verse 19, the disciples asked him privately, "Why could we not cast it out?" And he further explains their faithlessness in verse 20. He says, "Because of your little faith." That's the reason why you couldn't cast it out. And the littleness of his disciples' faith was a subject of constant rebuke. In fact, this is the fifth time in the Gospel of Matthew that Jesus has rebuked his disciples for their little faith. He said it in Matthew 6:30, Matthew 8:26, Matthew 14:31, and Matthew 16:8. "Oh, you of little faith, oh, you of little faith." Over and over again, Jesus is saying that. But this time, he adds a very interesting statement in verse 20. He says, "It's because of your little faith, for truly I say to you, if you have faith like a grain of mustard seed, you will say to this mountain, 'Move from here to there,' and it will move, and nothing will be impossible for you. Faith like a grain of mustard seed. That's what Jesus said they needed. Now, if he's rebuking them for their little faith, and he's saying that what they need is faith like a grain of mustard seed, that must mean that their faith is little indeed. You know, in Mark chapter 4, in verse 31, Jesus called the mustard seed the smallest of all the seeds on earth. That's not very much faith that Jesus requires. Jesus is saying it's just a little bit of faith that you need, and yet he's rebuking them for the littleness of their faith. What does that show us? What does that teach us? Well, I think it shows us this, that the size of faith is determined by its quality. Jesus' disciples had been successful in casting out demons in the past. They had demonstrated faith in previous encounters, but none of that mattered here. None of that mattered now. It didn't matter how many demons they had dealt with before. What mattered was how they were dealing with the one right in front of them. And their faith should have grown as they continued to experience the Lord's power in their lives. Their faith should have gotten larger and greater, but the quality of their faith should have stayed exactly the same. By the way, this is why I find great encouragement in being around new Christians sometimes. You know, when you are around somebody who has just taken the first step in following Jesus, what they have demonstrated is beautiful faith. And there might be a lot of things that they don't understand. There might be a lot of maturity that they need to develop. There might be a lot of things they need to be taught. There might be ways that they need to grow. But that simple, trusting faith is exactly the same kind of faith that all of us need to have all of the time. The same simple trusting faith that leads somebody to take step one is the same faith that they need to take step two and step three and every step after that. The size of faith ultimately is determined by its quality. And it's a quality that none of us can afford to lose. And so what the disciples should have understood from this experience was that the same faith they had from the beginning was the faith that they needed now. And I think many of us would do well to learn from their example. Do you remember when you first decided to follow Jesus? Do you remember maybe a time when you had drifted away and then decided to come back? Do you remember the zeal? Do you remember the trust? Do you remember the humility? Don't ever lose that. That's what the nine disciples needed to learn. But what about the perspective of the father of this demon-possessed boy? Now, in Matthew chapter 17, we don't read a lot about his interactions with Jesus. To learn more about his perspective, we actually have to turn over to the Gospel of Mark. So let's go over to Mark chapter 9, and we'll see his perspective of this experience also. Mark chapter 9. Now, in Mark chapter 9, the story begins in much the same way. We see Jesus coming down from the Mount of Transfiguration. He finds this crowd arguing with his disciples. He asks what they're arguing about. He's told about the disciples' failure to cast the demon out of the man's son. He exclaims in verse 19, "O faithless generation, how long am I to be with you? How long am I to bear with you? Bring him to me." But then we get some added details in the following verses. So we'll pick up here in Mark chapter 9 and verse 20. Mark 9 and verse 20. It says, "And they brought the boy to him. And when the spirit saw him, immediately it convulsed the boy, and he fell on the ground and rolled about, foaming at the mouth. And Jesus asked his father, how long has this been happening to him? And he said, from childhood. And it has often cast him into fire and into water to destroy him. But if you can do anything, have compassion on us and help us. And Jesus said to him, if you can. All things are possible for one who believes. Immediately the father of the child cried out and said, I believe. Help my unbelief. And when Jesus saw that a crowd came running together, he rebuked the unclean spirit, saying to it, you mute and deaf spirit, I command you, come out of him and never enter him again. And after crying out and convulsing him terribly, it came out, and the boy was like a corpse, so that most of them said, he is dead. But Jesus took him by the hand and lifted him up, and he arose. And when he had entered the house, his disciples asked him privately, why could we not cast it out? And he said to them, this kind cannot be driven out by anything but prayer. I love the compassion of Jesus that we see here. You know, verse 20 describes a very traumatic scene. It says, when they brought the boy to him, the spirit saw him. Immediately, it convulsed the boy. He fell on the ground and rolled about, foaming at the mouth. Could you imagine seeing your child like that? That must have been disturbing. That must have been traumatizing. But it's in the midst of all of this panic and all of this pandemonium that Jesus talks to the boy's father and he asks him a question. He asked him, how long has this been happening to him? And that's a very interesting question to ask. Because number one, Jesus never asked a question that he didn't already know the answer to. Jesus would have known the answer to this question. He's not relying on the boy's father to give him some information that he doesn't already have. And secondly, the answer doesn't even matter. You know, does it make any difference at all how long this has been happening to him? Whether it's been happening for 15 minutes or for 15 years, does that make a difference in Jesus' ability to correct the situation? Jesus doesn't ask this question for his benefit, but for the man's. The only reason Jesus asks this question is to show that he cares. He wants the man to understand that he is compassionate about him. And that's actually what leads the man, I think, to respond to Jesus the way that he does. He answers the question in verses 21 and 22. He says it's been happening from childhood. He talks about how the spirit has often cast him into the fire and into the water to destroy him. It seems like this demon has actually been trying to kill the boy. But then he adds this. But if you can do anything, have compassion on us and help us. In other words, what the man says to Jesus is, since you seem to be willing to help, are you able to? Now, under the circumstances, that might seem like a pretty reasonable thing to say to Jesus. After all, his disciples have not been able to help. His disciples have not shown that they have much power or ability in this situation. And so he says to Jesus, if you're able, if you can, will you help us? And Jesus corrects him ever so gently in verse 23. If you can. All things are possible for one who believes. And then in verse 24, it tells us, immediately the father of the child cried out and said, I believe, help my unbelief. And I've got to tell you, that might be my favorite prayer in the whole Bible. I believe, help my unbelief. It's so honest. It's so honest. The man is saying to Jesus, I do believe in you, But please don't let my unbelief keep me from your blessings. I know that my faith needs to grow, but I also know that you're the only one who can help me. What is that? That is faith like a grain of mustard seed. That's what that is. It's not perfect. It's not complete. It still has room to grow, but it's real. It's authentic. It's humble. It's sincere. And it's exactly the kind of faith that Jesus requires. And with that, Satan's power is broken. Jesus cast the demon out, commanding it never to return. And here's what the Father's perspective shows us. That the growth of faith is produced by its honesty. Everybody who truly believes has to face their unbelief. And Jesus will meet us where we are, but not where we pretend to be. See? Jesus will meet us where we are, not where we pretend to be. In order for unbelief to be addressed, you have to face the unbelief. The solution to the problem is the acknowledgement of it. This is precisely the way faith grows. I think sometimes people are afraid to admit their unbelief. Sometimes people are embarrassed to admit their unbelief. Sometimes we live in denial of our unbelief, but the longer that we deny it, the longer we're putting off moving through it. I was just talking to somebody last week, and as we were talking about his belief and his unbelief, he expressed exactly this thought. Realizing that he wants to believe more, realizing that he wants to trust in Jesus, but being very honest about the fact that he needs to grow in his trust. And I pointed him to this story and I showed him that it's when we humbly and sincerely recognize our need to increase our dependence on Jesus, as we come to him with our weak and our incomplete faith, that is the way he teaches us to trust him more and more. None of us have perfect faith. None of us have complete faith. But when we realize that we want to grow in our faith, that's the honesty by which the faith can multiply. But there's one more perspective in this story that I'd like for us to consider. Now that we've talked about the 9 disciples who were at the base of the mountain when Jesus came down, and these were the ones who failed to cast the demon out, and we've considered the perspective of the father of the demon-possessed boy and his interaction with Jesus, what do you think about the 3 disciples who had been on the mountain? What about the perspective of Peter, James, and John as they came down the Mount of Transfiguration with Jesus? Well, let's go back over to Matthew chapter 17, and I'd like to read verses 1 through 9. We'll put ourselves in their sandals for just a minute. Starting in Matthew chapter 17 and verse 1, this is what they experienced before they arrived at the scene. It says, after 6 days, Jesus took with him Peter and James and John, his brother, and led them up a high mountain by themselves. And he was transfigured before them. And his face shone like the sun, and his clothes became white as light. And behold, there appeared to them Moses and Elijah talking with him. And Peter said to Jesus, Lord, it is good that we are here. If you wish, I will make 3 tents here, one for you and one for Moses and one for Elijah. He was still speaking when, behold, a bright cloud overshadowed them, and a voice from the cloud said, this is my beloved son, with whom I am well pleased. Listen to him. When the disciples heard this, they fell on their faces and were terrified. But Jesus came and touched them, saying, "Rise and have no fear." And when they lifted up their eyes, they saw no one but Jesus only. And as they were coming down the mountain, Jesus commanded them, "Tell no one the vision until the Son of Man is raised from the dead." Now, this tells us that Peter, James, and John shared an experience with Jesus that the other disciples were not privy to. They were told not to talk about this until Jesus had risen from the dead. Now, after Jesus rose from the dead, they certainly talked about it. And we find out what a meaningful experience this was for them. In fact, John references it when he writes 1 John chapter 1. And Peter talks about it when he writes 2 Peter chapter 1. And of course, the gospel writers all put it into the account of the gospel here. But when it was happening in real time, only Peter, James, and John knew what had happened on the mountain. And so when they arrive at the scene with the demon-possessed boy and the scandal that has happened, they have an experience that the other nine disciples have not had. And when it's all over, as we've already talked about, down in Matthew 17 and verse 20, Jesus tells them, "If you have faith like a grain of mustard seed, you will say to this mountain, 'Move from here to there,' and it will move, and nothing will be impossible for you." So first, let's talk about what all of the disciples should have understood from that. I think it's very fairly obvious that Jesus is using figurative language. He's not making any promises about your ability to change the topography of the earth. What he's talking about is how faith changes the topography of our circumstances. Mountains would represent insurmountable obstacles. You know, if you're walking on a path and you see a mountain in the middle of your path, that represents an insurmountable obstacle. That would be a very overwhelming challenge. And the closer you get to the mountain, the more it dominates your focus. It's all you can see. The closer you get to it, the bigger, the more overwhelming, the more challenging it seems. But what Jesus is teaching us is that faith changes the topography of our circumstances. That what might have seemed like this overwhelming, intimidating challenge can be removed, and we can have a level path to walk on instead. And I think that that would have been fairly straightforward for all of the disciples to understand. But I do wonder how Peter, James, and John might have heard Jesus in verse 20. Matthew 17 and verse 1 tells us Jesus led them up a high mountain by themselves. Then after the transfiguration, verse 9 mentions them coming down the mountain. And then the next reference to mountains is in verse 20, where Jesus says, "If you have faith like a grain of mustard seed, you will say to this mountain, 'Move from here to there,' and it will move, and nothing will be impossible for you." I wonder if Peter, James, and John kind of like looked at each other and like one of them mouthed the words at the other one and said, "This mountain?" This mountain? Is Jesus saying something about what we just saw and what we just experienced on this mountain? Is there something about our experience on the Mount of Transfiguration that we can take with us from here to there by faith? Maybe so. Remember the lesson of the Transfiguration. Verse 5 says that they heard the voice from heaven saying, "This is my beloved Son, with whom I am well pleased. Listen to him." And then in verse 6, It says, when the disciples heard this, they fell on their faces and were terrified. But Jesus came and touched them, saying, "Rise and have no fear." And when they lifted up their eyes, they saw no one but Jesus only. Here's what I think we learn from the perspective of Peter, James, and John. The power of faith is sustained by its focus. On the Mount of Transfiguration, Peter, James, and John experienced the reality of Jesus' majesty. They saw him as he truly is. It was impressed upon them that Jesus is worthy of their full attention. He's the one to listen to. He's the one to look to. When you keep your focus on him, you have nothing to fear. Fear actually comes when you take your eyes off of him. By the way, this was actually a refresher course for Peter. Peter was a remedial student in the Transfiguration because Jesus had already taught him this lesson in Matthew 14. You remember in Matthew 14, the disciples had been out on the sea in the middle of the night during a storm. Jesus came walking out on the sea toward them. And in Matthew 14 and verse 26, it says, when the disciples saw him walking on the sea, they were terrified and they said, "It is a ghost." And they cried out in fear. But immediately Jesus spoke to them saying, "Take heart, it is I, do not be afraid." And Peter answered him, "Lord, if it is you, command me to come to you on the water." He said, "Come." So Peter got out of the boat and walked on the water and came to Jesus. But when he saw the wind, he was afraid. And beginning to sink, he cried out, "Lord, save me." Jesus immediately reached out his hand, took hold of him, saying to him, "O you of little faith, why did you doubt?" And when they got into the boat, the wind ceased, and those in the boat worshipped him, saying, "Truly, you are the Son of God." See, when your attention is shifted off of Jesus to the wind and to the waves, of course you're going to be afraid. When you take your eyes off Jesus and you see the challenge of your circumstances, of course it's going to be overwhelming. But when you remember the lesson of the Transfiguration, when you listen to him, when your vision is filled with his image, when he is the one who occupies the fullness of your focus and your attention, you can always have courage. Because Jesus is the Son of God. Because Jesus is the master of the wind and the waves. Jesus is the Lord of heaven and earth. He is the King of the universe. And so no matter the way things might look, you can always trust that he's in control. By faith, we can take the Mount of Transfiguration with us from here to there. We can keep the reality of Jesus' majesty before our eyes. When we have faith like a grain of mustard seed, we can say to this mountain, "Move from here to there," and it will move, and nothing will be impossible for us. Now, we've considered three different perspectives of the faith that moves the mountain in this story. We've thought about the nine disciples who learned that the size of faith is determined by its quality, the father of the demon-possessed boy who demonstrated the growth of faith is produced by its honesty, Peter, James, and John who should have learned the power of faith is sustained by its focus. But here's what all three perspectives have in common. They show us that those who access the power of Christ are those who recognize the necessity of trusting in him. That's really the bottom line. Until we realize that we are utterly dependent on Jesus Christ, we'll never have the faith that moves the mountain. And if we ever forget that we are utterly dependent on Jesus Christ, our faith will stop being effective. But Jesus promises that with faith, nothing will be impossible for us. Nothing. Not the challenge of cancer. Not the challenge of losing a loved one. Not debilitating illness. Not financial hardship. Not uncertainty with our jobs. Nothing will be impossible for you with faith. And here's why that's true. Because faith is essentially trusting in someone's care and competence. That applies to every relationship in which you trust anybody. You know, if you have faith in your doctor, it's because you trust in his care and his competence. You believe that he wants to help you and he's able to help you. If you have faith in your mechanic, it's because you are trusting in his care and his competence. You believe he wants to help you and he's able to help you. But while a doctor might be able to save your body and a mechanic might be able to save your vehicle, Jesus is the one who's able to save your soul. He's the one who's able to save you completely. He's the one who is able to break Satan's power of sin and death. And here's how we can have confidence that that's true. Jesus showed us that his care is infinite by dying on the cross for our sins. No matter what else happens to you in life, no matter what questions you might have about God's will or why God is not responding to situations the way that you might think that he should or you want him to, you can never doubt the love of God for you because Jesus died on the cross for your sins. We can have absolute confidence in his care. But we can also have absolute confidence in his competence because not only did he die, but he overcame death. He rose from the dead, never to die again. He left an empty tomb. And so no matter what we're facing, no matter how violent the demon, no matter how stormy the sea, when we keep our eyes on Jesus, all fear is eliminated. Faith in him changes the topography of whatever circumstances we're in. Insurmountable obstacles and overwhelming challenges become manageable. We can rejoice always. We can be content in whatever situation we're in because our Savior has proven that he is willing and able to save us. Our faith might not be perfect, but if it's humble and sincere, Jesus will meet us where we are. Our faith will grow, and with faith in him, Satan's power over us is broken. That's the faith that moves the mountain. And I hope that if you are here this morning and you realize that you need to come to Jesus, that this story also encourages you to his willingness to receive you. All you need is faith like a mustard seed. With sincere, honest, trusting faith, Jesus can do great things in your life. He can totally transform your situation. He can give you power to overcome whatever obstacles you face. But you have to have the faith that causes you to take the first step. There's somebody here that wants to come to Jesus, who wants to be forgiven of their sins, who wants to start this new life. Or if there's somebody here who wants to share some spiritual challenges that we can pray for you in, you are invited to let us know. You can come to the front while we stand together and sing.